Hello and welcome to another EG podcast, this time on the future of Belfast. I'm Damien Wild. We ran several city focuses during our UK Cities Week, and like the others, this one was lively and insightful. And if you're wondering why the discussion is Brexit light, it's because we were led by questions from our audience. Clearly, they were less interested, or more fatigued perhaps, than many commentators. Instead, you will hear debate on the future of retail, residential, and the importance of transport infrastructure. Issues that clearly matter more to those on the ground than some of the macro drivers. Belfast has changed and charged ahead in recent years. It has a young and dynamic labour force, it's a magnet to international companies, and it ticks many green boxes too. But like so many cities, it faces challenges in delivering the right kind of residential at the right volume and in developing its transport infrastructure. Other issues are coming thick and fast too, from COVID to Brexit, as well as managing structural change in real estate. It will be a challenge to deal with all these issues in the next 30 minutes, but I'm sure we'll manage it with the help of a great panel. And don't forget, you can get involved in the debate by tweeting using the hashtag EGFutureCities. So, to our panel. Mark Blair is a partner at Shoesmiths. Fionnuala Brennan is head of corporate property at AIB NI. Chris Conway is CEO of Translink. Gareth Howell is a divisional director at Savills, and Alistair Reid is strategic director for Place and Economy at Belfast City Council. Welcome everyone, thank you for joining us. I've got plenty of questions, but we've also got some that have come in from our audience, and I think we should get straight into those today. So I'm going to bring in a question from Richard Bigg of Camino Leisure Holdings. He asks, what will happen to city centres with the move to working from home, now very likely irreversible for many? Will many office blocks be recommissioned as apartments, hotels, with the reinvention leading to new neighbourhoods? It's a question that we've been wondering about for some time, but it's really moved up the agenda over the last 6 months or so. Mark, can I start with you on that one?
Yeah, thanks, Damien. I suppose I'm a good person to start with, as Shoesmiths have such a network of offices across all of the UK. We've got 13 in various cities in England and Scotland and now in Belfast. And it's a debate we've had across all our offices firsthand. And to be honest, the feeling, and this is just the feeling I'm getting from the lawyers and myself, is that everybody wants to be back in the office. As a law firm, you know, you need to swap ideas, you need to collaborate with each other. You want to kind of supervision for the juniors. You know, it's an important teaching function to be in the office. So I'm not sure if that question's strictly correct. I don't think it is irreversible. I think long-term, we're all going to want to be back in the office again and back in the city centre. And I think that applies to every city, not just Belfast. In the short term, though, we are seeing flexible office space coming to the fore. And I think that's the way it's going to be for a while. We've seen quite a few decent projects in Belfast, from Step Space to Urban HQ to Hubflow. And I've been involved in a few of those. And they seem to be doing very well. It's the kind of serviced office suite model as opposed to entirely open plan. So I think in the short term, they're going to stay busy. And in the long term, I think people will want to come back into the offices as before. It's my own view.
So the future looks very much like the past, do you think?
Possibly. I suppose where it might change slightly is if you're trying to fund new office development in Belfast, and there's quite a bit going on at the minute, if this flexible structure is what people are putting in place, you have to get banks and funders comfortable with not having a 10 or 15 or 20 year lease to a big accountancy firm. It's actually more flexible lease terms or even license terms. So I think from a funding perspective and a deal structuring perspective, it's not back to what it was. But I think from human nature perspective, people are going to want to go back into the city centre and into the offices.
Thank you. Fionnuala, that's a perfect segue to you there. If human nature persuades us that we want to be back in the office, will the funders facilitate that?
I suppose fundamentally, I think it's something that I do agree with Mark on, that there is a future for office and in Belfast in particular. You know, we've seen a lot of new firms come into Belfast and expanding within Belfast, and we're seeing various different types of leases coming into effect for those. I do think that it is going to change. We are going to see more flexibility as that goes on, but I suppose it's something that as a bank and as a funder of office investment and office development that we need to be keeping a close eye on, and to be making sure that we're able to kind of adapt and adapt ourselves, that we are able to still be involved in that sort of market where there's a future.
And does the nature of security change, Fionnuala? In the old days, that blue chip lease, you know, it may have been to a retailer with a network of hundreds of branches around the country. Is what you're looking for in terms of security different?
I think in terms of leases, obviously lease confident has always been important. I think one thing that we've all seen, you know, kind of you're talking about retail in particular in recent years, that it's so much harder to tell now what, you know, what is blue chip and does it have the same weight as it would have had before. You know, definitely the rental stream of any property is something that funders and banks are going to be looking at, and just kind of how that pans out in terms of the weight of a tenant is something that has to be seen as we get through kind of what's going on at the minute.
Okay, things are changing. And Alistair, from a city council's point of view, how do you see the future? Do you see the uses changing? Do the systems and the decision making apparatus support that?
I think while we're seeing in the short term a huge degree of turbulence, I think I would very much agree with both the previous comments that the things in the future may not be all that different from where they are now in terms of people wanting to convene in city centres. And I think if you put it in the kind of grandest macro terms, when cities grew out of public health crises in the 19th century and cities were built around the response to cholera and other kind of huge pandemic issues. So, and you know, we've seen that Europe has seen through two world wars, people abandoned cities and then very quickly got back into the city. So I think the kind of macro kind of view of cities is that's where people want to do business. However, I think we do need to set that against some of the turbulence that city centres have been experiencing over, say, the last 10 years, where we've seen, particularly in the retail side, a rise of internet as an alternative to the shopping experience. We've seen people with less disposable income. And in Belfast ourselves, we had a very kind of particular issue around the Primark fire. Now, against all that, we've been setting a kind of set of objectives around how do you regenerate and regrow the city centre. Some of that is going to be about different usage. I think the retail environment is going to change. The office environment there will be a degree of turbulence over the next perhaps 2, 3, 4 years. But even in Belfast itself, we still have a very solid pipeline of office development, and indeed we have speculative office development funded in the city at the moment. So reason to be optimistic there. And then the other big issue for Belfast is obviously the residential offer. For historic reasons, there isn't the same residential population in Belfast city centre as other comparable European cities. And I think we've now seen a move to that. And I think in the short term, that's where the funding will move. We know, for example, at the moment, a lot of retailers are not paying their rent or are in some form of negotiation around rent payment. A lot of office occupiers are seeking to renegotiate on shorter terms, but residential at the moment, people are paying their rent. So I think that gives us a good kind of basis to go and seek funding in the residential area, which works for Belfast and works for where Belfast is at the moment.
Okay, and the second part of Richard's question, Alistair, was around that reinvention, which doesn't sound like it's going to be a reinvention. There might be a degree of repurposing, but perhaps not reinvention. But do you think it'll lead to the creation of new neighbourhoods?
Well, I think that's going to be a very kind of a challenge that we want to pick up. So people will want to live in city centres, and I guess the trajectory that we're looking at in Belfast, having had there are adjacent kind of communities to the city centre, but with it in terms of actually living in the city centre itself, for historic reasons, there were 30 years where people weren't allowed to live in the centre of Belfast. In the past 5 years, we've seen 3,500 students move in purpose-built student accommodation. We've got another 4,500 purpose-built student units in the pipeline, either on site or coming through the planning system at the moment. So there is now a kind of demand for some form of city centre living. Now, that hasn't yet transpired into a huge build-to-rent offer, for example. However, that is happening at the moment. And if you imagine that one third of these students are leaving their university every year, then there are something like 1,700 to 2,000 young people who have an experience of city centre living looking now for their next move. And we've seen predominantly really in London, Manchester, and to an extent Bristol, we've seen students coming out of that kind of experience and looking for that build to rent. Now that does present problems of transient communities, but I think the model has been shown to have some stick within London, within Bristol, within other places where people do want to be there. Now, of course, there's a whole other side to the housing issue in Belfast around social housing, and that's something that's also got to be seen in terms of some of these kind of large-scale developments. And how do you mix that kind of social provision, private rented and owner-occupied in the single communities, and how do you make sure that the right kind of facilities are put in there for these communities? Now, that could be anything from schools, medical, the right retail offer. So there's a whole kind of set of issues there that present us with a great opportunity.
Okay, very interesting. And Chris and Gareth, just to bring you in on this one briefly before broadening the conversation now. Chris, we'll come back to some transport specifics in a moment, but I just wonder whether you do see, whether you agree or disagree with the rest of the panel, that you know, what we're looking at going forward is a little more residential, but perhaps not a retreat from offices.
Yeah, broadly, I would agree. I think what we're seeing and the indications we're getting are that people are enjoying working from home, but do want to get back to the office, but probably will want to see a bit more flexibility. So they'll maybe we work in 3-4 days a week in the office and maybe taking that 1 or 2 days at home more flexibly. And we think that actually could be a real benefit for public transport, because people may see the need not to have the private car to do journey in every day, but perhaps to be more flexible and use public transport on the days that they want to come into the office and work from home other days. So I think it'll create flexibility and more people will want to use that flexibility. I think office spaces will still be required, and probably with, you know, the lessons we're learning from COVID-19, you know, more space requirements, ability for people to have bigger areas for, you know, communal areas, that there's more space for people to spread out. And I think that will change requirements as well, and there still will be a need for grade A offices.
And is that changing your planning, Chris? Are you preparing sort of 4-day, 3-day season tickets, that sort of thing, to encourage people to work economically as well as flexibly?
Yeah, absolutely. We will be looking at all of our types of tickets to see what's the best way to make it more flexible. We'll be introducing a new ticketing system next year, which will be a tap on, tap off type system. And we'll be looking at how we cap that in such a way that allows for greater flexibility across all modes of transport in Belfast and across Northern Ireland.
Okay, thank you. And Gareth, lastly, I think if, based on the conversations I've had recently with other city leaders and business leaders, I think some other cities are certainly anticipating a greater change, and it sounds like Belfast is expecting. Do you think there will be more changes behind the scenes and below the line, perhaps, with lease lengths coming down further, greater provision of flexible offices and so on?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think we're still very early in the office landscape to see how things are going to shape up. The virus is still prevalent. So, and accordingly, most employers have, you know, followed government guidelines to work at home. But I think once we get people back in the office, we'll see a more candid assessment of the issues around home working and the benefits that it, you know, that working in an office has for culture, staff, welfare, you know, business development, training, and productivity. It strikes me that the office still has a very central role to that, to the function of a business. But one of the things that I think will come to the fore is the hybrid model. I think companies will understand the need to offer something that is attractive to developers and landlords. So there will be a model of you know, the standard 10-year lease or 5-year lease, but perhaps that will be supplemented with something that is a little bit more flexible to meet their needs. And it's certainly something that's forming discussions that we're having with developers at this moment in time about, you know, the possibility to incorporate flexibility within elements of developments and buildings that are being looked at the moment. But you have to assume that, look, in a changing market, best-in-class product is going to remain at the forefront and will mop up whatever demand is there. Whereas landlords of older stock will have to consider the potential for reinvestment or indeed change of use. And in some cases, the obvious solution for that may be conversion to residential. But the key fundamentals of pricing, demand and location will remain and will require careful assessment. Interestingly, I think the interaction of offices and city centre residential actually are intertwined. We need to continue to use our, you know, leverage our skilled labour force and our cost competitive position to continue to attract foreign direct investment, which will create the highly paid sort of skilled jobs that will allow people to live, work and socialise within the city centre and use all the amenities that it has.
And is it too early to call how that's been impacted by the experience of the last 6 months? Gareth?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. I mean, at this point, we're still very much in the hiatus. We need to, you know, really, I suppose, get past the prevalence of the virus and hopefully get people back into a position where they can repopulate offices. And then we can look at the opportunities that are out there. But certainly, you know, we need, you know, investment in infrastructure to come forward so that we can lead the way for the private sector to come in behind that.
Okay, thank you. Another question that builds on that one is from Cal Moolam of Venus Care. And I'll, as I brought up retail with you, Fionnuala, I'll stick with you on that. He asks, what's going to replace the retailer in the city? We have been talking about residential, but is residential enough to mop up where that retail vacancy that exists?
Well, I suppose with retail, it wasn't without its challenges before kind of COVID came along, and COVID definitely hasn't improved things as we would all know. So it is something that from a kind of city planning perspective is very much under watch, and, you know, kind of obviously from the bank's perspective as well. I think one of the things that is key for developing the city as the face of retail changes is how we can make it sustainable. So whatever goes in to replace some of those empty units, that is something that has a life to it, that is something that is future proofing. So for example, whenever we think of Belfast, you know, kind of some of the things that maybe we overlook are what's there already. So kind of the history and the architecture and the facilities and the services that are there and that are available to people, and how we can play on those and really kind of extract the best value that we have from what's there already. And I think in terms of sustainability, that's something that's very important, to repurpose what's there already and to stop, I suppose, that kind of urban sprawl and the dead centre that sometimes you can see in other places. I think that's something that's key for the planning for the future.
And it sounds like that's a ever bigger consideration in your lending decisions.
It is, yeah. And I suppose AIB has a massive focus on sustainability, and it's something that we're looking for in order to kind of design and build that future. I suppose one of the keys that we're looking at the minute is to build back better. So to use this as a reset opportunity and say, okay, well, actually, what can we do? What's available now to be able to take this space? Kind of AIB Green Spaces is an initiative that we're looking at. So in terms of repurposing, you know, kind of whether it be empty buildings, empty sites, rooftops, that sort of thing. And it's something that is taken into consideration as we are looking at any sort of venture.
Okay, thank you. And Mark, if offices aren't going to undergo that fundamental shift, will retail?
Well, yes, we've seen it for a while and we're seeing it at the minute. I mean, I've probably got more lease re-gears on for retailers now at one go than I've ever had in my whole career. And I'm trying to take that as a positive. I know some of them are fighting for survival, but some have just disappeared as well. And the ones that we're negotiating with now for various landlords on various shopping centres and retail parks are trying to keep going. Their terms are more flexible. We're maybe becoming more turnover based. But they are trying to keep going and keeping their model going. And I think retail is going to remain important. It always has done in Belfast. It needs to be viewed collectively with leisure and hospitality, which have both been hit very badly, but are massive for Northern Ireland as well, generally. And then we need to find a way to attract more people into the city centre. And that's, I think, where perhaps the build to rent and some of the council master planning could come into play. But I mean, I've seen, we're doing quite a few pop-ups at the minute in the run-up to Christmas. For various retailers and landlords. I think retail is going to keep going actually again, but it's becoming more and more flexible and maybe a bit more short-term and a bit more opportunistic. Maybe in the longer term, we'll see certainly in the areas outside Belfast are maybe the smaller independents coming to the fore again. And a lot of the Northern Ireland economy is built on those kind of businesses. And I just really hope they can keep going. And I see they are taking up space that maybe some of the larger national retailers have left. And I think that is a positive thing even now.
Okay, thank you. And Gareth, if I think back to a year ago, or perhaps even 8 or 9 months ago, that it was the experiential that was going to save retail, but it's the experiential that's all but impossible now. So retail needs to undergo its second reinvention within 12 months, doesn't it?
Yeah, and I suppose until we can all socialise again, that's going to be problematic. I mean, I don't see the death of the city centre as a focal point for retail. I think shopping will continue to be of interest to people, not least of all because it's a function of need, but equally it's seen as a leisure activity within our society. So for me, it becomes a question of how much trade can actually be delivered through that the bricks and mortar, and how that will reshape and reconfigure the retail space going forward. The ability of retailers to deliver in an omni-channel environment is probably what is going to be key to their future success. But where there is failure, you know, we have to see repurposing, and that will be made up from, you know, the likes of leisure, office, and of course, residential.
Okay. And Alistair, the second part of Cal's question was, what will happen to business rates if retailers do retreat from the city? Is that something that you anticipate happening?
Well, I think that it is a very acute problem because, as you may be aware, the funding of local government in Northern Ireland is much more dependent on the direct relationship between the number of businesses that you have in your area, and so that the rate payment is coming straight into the council coffers, if you like. So we do have concerns in terms of our ability to deliver long-term services if we don't get this right. So there is a huge kind of almost a business onus on the council to get this right. We benefit as an organisation hugely from having the right retail offer and also the right office offer, and we think that with the changes that we're and the investments that we're making in the city centre, that we will be able to sustain that. But you're absolutely correct that there is a kind of it would be in our SWOT analysis. It's in our threat column. If the city centre doesn't generate the rate space that we currently enjoy, then we will have to respond. But I think I still remain, you know, I'm hugely optimistic about Belfast generally and our ability to turn around the city centre, so that as we go back, the Belfast centre has not had the same transfer away from the shops to internet shopping. We've had traditionally under utilisation of internet in the city centre. As has been said, shopping is a kind of social It's a leisure activity. People will continue to transact under these circumstances. So I don't think it's over yet. And also there was a comment about the smaller independents, and I think is going to be at the core of future offer as well. And that's very much where the City Council is working in conjunction with the business sector and ensuring that we can find space for these smaller independents.
Okay, thank you. And Chris, in the interest of time, I'm going to jump to another question, which comes from Neil McIver at the Department for International Trade. How important do the panel view the launching of Weaver's Cross as a transport-led major regeneration project to aid economic growth for Belfast and the wider region?
Well, as you rightly introduced it, Weaver's Cross is a transport-led regeneration project offering the opportunity to develop about 1.3 million square feet of office-led mixed-use space. And it's right in the heart of Belfast. And at the centre of Weaver's Cross is the high-quality multimodal public transport, or Belfast transport hub, which will also be a catalyst for urban regeneration and city transformation. And I think it's hugely important for Belfast and for this part of Belfast, and also for wider Northern Ireland as well. This will connect all of the main modes of transport, bus, rail, and active travel, both walking and cycling, and right across Northern Ireland, right across the island of Ireland, because it'll also have the major connection between Belfast and Dublin, both rail and bus as well. In terms of economic benefits, I mean, the construction itself is publicly funded over the next 5 years, and then the redevelopment or the regeneration side of Weaver's Cross, and we will be looking for a development partner for that. And if you look just at the construction side, you're looking at 400 to 500 construction jobs a year over the next 10 years. And if you look at the benefits it'll bring to this part of the city, you're looking around 8,000 spaces in grade A offices, which again, a great opportunity for FDI with major connections to all the major airports as well. So I think it's hugely significant for Belfast and for the economic development and growth opportunities that it will bring.
Okay, thank you. And Gareth, it could bring as many as 50,000 jobs by some measures. That's enormously important, isn't it? At a time when I listed some uncertainties in the intro, not least Brexit.
Yeah, well, you know, we want to see, you know, the kind of environment that will, you know, offer accommodation for foreign direct investment to come in, and for the investment that has taken place in our education system, skilling up these employees. We need that to come full circle, so that, you know, the jobs, the accommodation, and the opportunities are there for investment. You know, you take something like Weaver's Cross. You know, traditionally Belfast has been a car dominated society, so this kind of investment that you know, increases capacity and moves towards meeting sustainability agendas, particularly in the context of population increase, climate change, and so on, congestion. This kind of positive transport experience can hugely impact adoption of the system, and thereby sort of stimulate adjacent land use and give the spin-off benefits from its creation.
Okay. And Mark, when you think about the clusters that Belfast has been successful in growing and capitalising upon around creative industries, fintech, cyber, professional services, they're the sort of young workers in those fields are ones who expect reliable public transport and interconnectivity. Do you think this will help grow those sectors and grow those sectors internationally as well?
Yes, absolutely. I think Weaver's Cross is massively exciting for Belfast. And creating that kind of space, and hopefully flexible space, could attract all those kinds of industries which Northern Ireland has been so successful in attracting over the last few years, from health tech as well, green tech, fintech, even advanced manufacturing in the surrounding area. But from a pure legal perspective, I think it could really be an exemplar scheme to show in Northern Ireland that we can do a proper public-private sector joint venture regeneration. As a firm in Shoesmith, we've done lots of those across the UK for various public sector bodies and developers. And I think TransLink have a real opportunity here to show that can be done in Belfast and therefore in Northern Ireland. And that could actually be used as a model for other parts of Northern Ireland, whether it's some kind of long-term income sharing or it's a genuine joint venture where the public sector put the land in and the private party put in the expertise and the money. And the other part of that actually is, I think also it could be used to show how public realm management can attract people into the city centre as well. We talked earlier about trying to bring more residents into the city centre. We need more green spaces. We need a good quality of living. And I think there's a real opportunity to enhance that as part of this scheme. I think it's going to be a fantastic scheme.
Okay, thank you. And Fionnuala, lastly, what do you think about the challenges, the changes, the opportunities that we've talked about? You know, you'd often ask a lender how they're feeling about what lies ahead. How are you feeling about Belfast's prospects on the balance of all of these considerations over the next 3 to 5 years?
I have to say that if we think of where we were in 2019, the positive momentum that we had got growing right through to Q1 20, really Belfast was on the up before obviously things took a little bit of a tumble in March and maybe temporarily got derailed. But no, I think that there's only positives for the future. I think that in terms of investment in Belfast, there's still disparity between other UK cities, between the ROI with the south of Ireland. There's massive opportunity for investment. There's, in terms of the talent pool that we have here, that homegrown talent and the development of Belfast as a city and Northern Ireland wider attracts then global talent. And coming back to the infrastructure and the residential opportunities that are going to be available, then we'll just underpin that and make Belfast an attractive place to live and to work and to stay and to travel to. And all of those things, I think, you know, kind of is what's going to drive the economy. And from then a funding perspective, that's, you know, kind of where we're going to see opportunities.
Okay. A good positive note to end on, and unfortunately we're out of time. Thank you for listening, and thank you for all your questions and making my job so easy. Thank you to our panel and to our partners, Savills Shoesmith, Belfast City Council and TransLink as well.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the EG Property Podcast. We hope you found the content insightful and helpful. If you'd like more of the same and to keep up with all the latest news, views, analysis and research that the EG Group has to provide, be sure to sign up to all of our property podcasts and subscribe to Radius Data Exchange for unlimited access to all of our content and comprehensive commercial real estate data.